What we must be is a people that are ready to war for truth, for righteousness, for the kingdom. In short, what we need to do is we need to dress up for the occasion, ladies and gentlemen. To forsake the cliches of the secular and the cliches of the Christian culture. And we need to march to a different tune that's led by angelic choirs rather than masqueraded demons. Because Satan knows the crucial target. He's seen the war. He knows where to target. He has inspected the holy places. He knows where the weaknesses of your faith are. And so we uphold, we defend the faith together this week. We defend the faith once and for all delivered to the saints. We need to understand what precisely are the devil's schemes. We need to learn to speak the truth boldly. We need to fight for the kingdom and to live rightly in the sight of God and man. And so this evening and throughout this week, you are called to be a priestly people. The kind of priestly people that engages the darkest enemy that you'll ever engage. And you're going to engage the darkest enemy whose name we know, Satan. And we're going to engage him not mildly. We're going to engage him by wearing our baptismal attire, by wearing that which God has given us. We carry the name of Jesus wherever we go because Jesus is our righteousness.
You gotta have Johnny Cash for this interview.
I see what you know. Did. I see
gotta
what
have
you
a little
did.
Grit. I got my cell buddy.
Oh,
coming on the show. See, cell block 4, both
yeah.
me and him.
Yeah, getting arrested.
In different states.
Yeah,
but we're still in cell block 4 together. hey y'all, welcome to Cross Politic on the Fight Laugh Feast Network. It's good to be with you. This really is an important show.
Seriously.
So stick around for that. But in the meantime, make sure you guys check out Prodigal America, and maybe Steve, our buddy Steve, will be coming.
Register and come to the Fight Laugh Feast Conference
in Fort Worth, Texas.
ProdigalAmerica.com. Kepler is an online marketplace for classical Christian education that assures parents maintain their agency without forfeiting the assistance and expertise of qualified conservative Christian teachers. Kepler offers university model courses in the classical tradition that fits your schedule and your budget. Visit www.kepler, that's KEPLER.education, and use the simple search tool to find the course and teacher that meets your child's needs. Or simply ask for help to get assistance from a real human being.
Fantastic.
That music just goes and goes.
Yeah, I just thought I'd let it go for a little bit because, be a little...
I don't always get background music for my ad read. Hey, we're really grateful to have with us Mr. Steve Baker. He's an investigative reporter for The Blaze and most recently has hit the news because he was arrested by the FBI for participation.
For being a really bad guy.
In January 6th. Steve, thank you for joining us on Cross Politic.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, there's a whole bunch going on and we sort of just want to like cannonball right into the middle of it. We found this picture of you at the January 6th, mostly peaceful protest.
And it looks like the cops trying to hold your hand and take you around.
And we just wanted to know, so drop us in, what's going on at this moment? I mean, we know there's a whole bunch of stuff to explain, but just what's going on in this moment? Here you are. It looks maybe, are you talking with the cop? Maybe it looks like as a female cop. What's going on at this moment on January 6th?
At this very moment, you will see that my head is slightly cocked to the left. If you want to put that back up there, I'll explain what's going. You see that? You know what I'm looking at that moment?
What's that?
Just on the other side of those two pillars, Ashley Babbitt's body is being feverishly worked on by FBI medics.
Wow.
At that very moment. Now, further up the hallway before we arrived at that spot, I was looking for a restroom. At this point, I'd been away from my hotel since 9 o'clock that morning after a big breakfast and several cups of coffee. And now it is just minutes before 3 o'clock at this time. And so I haven't seen a restroom all day. And so I'm looking for a restroom, and this very polite young female police officer walks up to me and she says, "Sir, may I safely escort you out of the building?" I said, "Yes, you can, but do I need to be safely escorted out?" She said, "Yes, sir, you do." I said, "Okay." I was in complete compliance. That was the first time an officer all day had said to me, "I need to leave," or "Can I," you know, whatever. So I complied, and she took me by the arm. Her hand was shaking like a leaf as we're walking down that hallway. Wow. She asked me a couple of times. She said, a very strange question. She said to me, "You know, she's standing on my right and she's shorter than I am." Mm-hmm. And so every time she talks to me, I would have to look over. And she said, "Sir, do you feel safe right now?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And then she asked me again, "Sir, do you feel safe right now?" I said, "Yes." And of course her hands are shaking. And I said, "Do you feel safe right now?" She said, "No, I don't." And right then, right where you're looking at, is when I noticed this figure on the floor in a puddle of blood. I didn't know it was a woman. I didn't know it was Ashley Babbitt at the time. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a man. I saw boots, jeans. I saw people, medics feverishly working on her or him or whatever, and the person there. And so I asked, as we were just about to exit through the doors, there's a double doorway there. And I was just about to ask, "Did you shoot him?" I said, is he shot? She said, "Yes, he is." I said, "Who shot him?" She said, "We did." I said, "Why did you shoot him?" She said, "He pulled a gun on us." Now, she didn't know. She didn't know. She wasn't trying to spread disinformation. You'd have to have heard their radio chatter was insane. You know, they were getting shots fired. They didn't know. It was fog of war, chaos, everything.
Yeah.
You'd have to have been there to hear what I heard one floor up when it happened to understand why she was just as confused as everybody else.
Right.
It wasn't until after I exited that door, knowing that, well, what happened was, as I was exiting the door, the paramedics from the DC fire department were coming up with the gurney, and I had to step aside and allow the gurney to pass by me. And of course, what goes up must come down. Well, what comes in must come out. And so I went and posted up outside that door. That was the south exit there at the Capitol.
Yeah.
So I stood up with my camera and just waited for the gurney to come out. I turned my camera on. A minute later, they brought her out, escorted by a SWAT unit, and they handed her over to the local paramedics. They were working on her. And then as I followed down with my camera down the ramp, as they were wheeling her down the ramp, I saw that it was a woman. I could see her bare breasts. Mm-hmm. I could see the long hair. Her face was turned towards me. Her eyes were wide open and she was gone. And I knew she was dead. And I actually, as soon as I videoed her all the way to the ambulance, then I stopped and I actually texted out to two or three people and said, "Shots fired. A lady's been hit. She's not going to make it."
Wow. So
you end up going to the Capitol. We have this, the first picture that we have here, Neil, if you want to flip over to it, is where you're coming in. It looks like the building, you're holding your camera up. And so you're coming in. Why is it? I mean, you're an investigative journalist. Are you there because of, you're just journalizing the whole thing?
Yeah, I had no intention of anything at the Capitol that day other than just to cover the event. I always tell this story in this manner. So for your audience, it's new, but I showed up that day with, my camera, a tripod, and a man on the street microphone, intending nothing more than to interview people on the street, because I didn't know what was going to be revealed in the speeches that day. And at the time, I had never been a Trump fan or a Trump supporter. And I was just curious about the event, because we were under the impression, if you recall back in those days, that somebody was going to release the Kraken about the election, alleged stolen election. So I thought to myself, if ever there's going to be a time and a place that would happen, it would certainly be here. I mean, in the waning days of Trump's term. And that if it was going to happen, it had to happen then. And so myself and another writer from Raleigh, North Carolina. We went up together and to cover the event. And so that's what our intention was that day, not knowing what it would turn into. But we started working our way, like so many tens of thousands of other people did. We started working our way towards the Capitol because there were scheduled events there. To be perfectly honest, as I've said a thousand times, the speeches were at the Ellipse were a nothing burger. And though I'd never been a big fan of Trump, I thought it was one of the most tepid and non-eventful and least interesting things I had ever heard him say, even though he spoke for over an hour. His speech, nor did any of the other speeches, live up to the hype that attracted so many hundreds of thousands of people to the Capitol that day.
So fast forward. Basically, you got arrested on Friday by the FBI for being a journalist in the Capitol that day.
Well, that's not what they're going to tell you. They didn't arrest you. You can't arrest anybody, for being a journalist. It's like in the old days of the Soviet Union. If you are a underground Christian dissident, that's not illegal in the Soviet Union. So they create a crime for you, and that's what they arrest you for. So the typical process for Christian dissidents in the Soviet Union back in those days when I worked over there doing those kind of things is that they would charge you with what they call their vagrancy law, and they would strip their your job away from you. So one of the big miracles of Marxism and Soviet communism was that nobody was unemployed. They had 100% employment. I don't know, you ever read the story in the news? And so they had 100% employment, because there's something for everybody there.
Right.
And so when you needed to be taken out, they would take your job away from you. And then you couldn't get another job anywhere else. And then after 6 months, you're in violation of their vagrancy law. And then you were subject to 1 year in prison as a result of that.
Wow. So
I make that comparison.
Yeah.
To you guys, because of the type of show that this is. But the point being is that they can't arrest me for my journalism. So they finally, they believe me, they tried to find a felony on me. They tried very much so, because I got a grand jury subpoena for my videos back in August of last year. And they were looking to try and hang me with a felony, because grand juries are not seated for misdemeanor investigations.
Right.
Grand juries are only seated for felony investigations. And so apparently the grand jury couldn't find it. And so they had to hit me with only the four basic misdemeanors that all of the low level January 6th defendants are hit with.
So when did the FBI first contact you, Steve?
This was in July of 21, some, 6 months, 7 months after the event.
And what happened then? And then, it's 2024 now. How do we get from them?
It's a long ways
21
away.
To spring of 24, you're finally being arrested.
Yeah, I'll give you the lightning round version of that. They contacted me in July. They actually called me directly. I deferred that to my attorney. We set up our first interview with them was scheduled in August of 21, and that had to be aborted because once they learned that the actual working agents did not know that they were disallowed to interview or interrogate or whatever you want to call it, a working member of the press or a journalist without the express written permission of the U.S. Attorney General's office. There's an actual, in the Code of Federal Regulations, there's a statute that a journalist cannot be interviewed by any federal agency without permission from the Attorney General's office. So that had to be referred. So that first scheduled interview was aborted. And then my attorney and the actual Attorney General's office of the United States had to negotiate what they call a proffer agreement for me to do a sit down cooperative interview. Once all of that was finally said and done, we did that in October of 21. And then my attorney received an email the week before Thanksgiving of 21. I remember the day very specifically. It's burned into my consciousness. November 21st, he received an email from an assistant U.S. attorney that said, your client is going to be charged within the week. Then we went on a media offensive. I think we scared them off. They had no idea what the response would be. And then we didn't hear from them for 20 months I mean, they went away.
Wow.
And no communication whatsoever for 20 months. And we did not hear from them again until August of last year, 2023, when I received the grand jury subpoena for me to turn over all of my own work and my videos from January 6th to them.
And then that's when you said you thought they were hunting for a felony.
Right.
Couldn't find one. And then take us from that point to last week.
Well, then we didn't hear from them again for 4 months. And then again, another date that will live in my own personal infamy is December 14th of last year. I was sitting in Thomas Massey's office and I got a text from my attorney. And let me tell you guys, when you get a text, a voluntary unexpected text from your attorney, it's never good.
Never good.
So I was like, oh crap. So I stepped out into the hallway there at the Rayburn Building in DC, and I called him up and he said, okay, well, it's happening, it's game on. They want you to self-surrender next week in Raleigh, which is where I live. I have an address in Raleigh, but I'm always on the road, I'm never home.
Yeah,
but I'm in Dallas right now. But the point being is that they said that I had to surrender next week, and that would have been the week before Christmas. And then at this point, now I'm working for the Blaze. Well, the Blaze machine went into action immediately. The response was just absolutely incredible and overwhelming, with millions of views to the announcements and videos and the shows. And I was with Glenn Beck the next morning.
Right.
And by the end of the next day, by the end of business the next day, which was on a Friday, we got another call from the investigating FBI agent to my attorney, in which he said, we've decided to delay his self-surrender till sometime after Christmas. And then we didn't hear from him again for 2 months until a couple of weeks ago, we got the notice that,
yeah.
And this time it didn't come from the investigating agent. It actually came from the assistant U.S. Attorney that has my case in D.C. Mm-hmm. And they called and said, okay, it's time. We need to negotiate a time and a place. We know he's traveling. The one thing that they have done is they have respected my schedule this entire time. We've always been cooperative, and they have been cooperative with my schedule. And so we chose to do this in Dallas, since I'm working here at the Blaze right now. And then we picked our day, and they were agreeable to that. And so on Friday morning, I showed up at the directed
this past Friday morning.
Just this past Friday morning, yeah. I showed up at the FBI field office in Dallas, and they took me into custody and handcuffed me, put me in the back of a car, drove me from there over to the federal courthouse in downtown Dallas, where they handed me off to the U.S. Marshals, who then proceeded to put me in leg irons, chains, belly chains, and put me in a cell with a meth dealer.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. All right. I need to read this ad. And then I got to ask him about the leg irons. Public houses or pubs are not just places to drink beer, wine, cider, or even something a little stronger. It's also a unique social center, very often the focus of community life in villages, towns, and cities throughout the world. We here at CrossPolitik hope to emulate that for you and for yours, and that's why you should grab yourself a pub membership at FightLaughFeast.com. We need you on this ride with us, so pull up a chair, grab a pint, and join us on this ride. Join the Fight Laugh Feast pub today. FightLaughFeast.com, FightLaughFeast.com.
Man, just a lot of questions to ask, but I mean, the FBI was originally set up to investigate and be an internal accountability bureau, right, for the federal government. But it was pretty quickly, within 5 years of the FBI started, dealing with things outside. But it's been a very corrupt organization for a long time. Steve, right now the Democrats have control of it, but some, you know, when the Republicans have control of it, they're doing corrupt things with the FBI. Now, I think the Democrats right now are doing the lawfare and the massive abuse of the DOJ and FBI are pretty egregious, but this just seems like a whole new level where I'm reading through the misdemeanors, the misdemeanors of how they define it. It says you were charged with four misdemeanors: knowingly entering or remaining in a restricted building or grounds without lawful authority,
surrounded by cops
as cops open the doors for you, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds. Never saw, there was never any disorderly conduct from you. Disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, parading, and then the last one, parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building, which you did none of those. But
correct.
Part of, and maybe here's where my question's really at, part of the reason why they're even able to do what they're doing now with you is because culturally or in the background, everyone has to admit that it was an insurrection and not a protest. That's how they can get away with it. So even if you respond and say, well, I was a journalist in the Capitol, well, that assumes that the Capitol was an insurrection. If you have to even make that argument. It's so crazy what's going on here. What I don't know. What do you make of this kind of lawfare that's going on with a journalist like you and the FBI and all that?
Well, there's, as they say nowadays, there's a lot to unpack there, and your own kind of shock and consternation. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
The first thing, let's just talk about the charges real quick. Four basic misdemeanors that all of the low-level offenders are hit with, mm-hmm. is exactly what I've been hit with. They don't have to actually apply to you. They hit you with them anyway.
Yeah.
And the reason, and so what they've done is they presented, charge number one is what I call the glorified trespassing charge. Yeah. Charge number two and number three are basically redundant. And go ahead and read them. And they're basically the same charge. And then number four is the picketing and parading. Well, number two and number three and number four, I never committed. The point of putting them in there is compounding the offenses means that I could earn up to, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years in prison if convicted on all of them. Right. So what they want me to do is they want me to take a quick plea deal on one of them. They wash their hands of me. They get rid of me. They get the notch in their gun belt. Right. They get the points towards their next career goal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's mm-hmm. what this is all about for them. That's why they're driving the numbers up individually.
Right.
Now, for the administration, for the government, obviously, it's not about just bonuses and pay raises and promotions, but that's the net result of what's taking place. And so they want
So they get incentives for arresting you? Did you just
absolutely? You didn't know that?
No.
The FBI field office chiefs, they get what do they call them? Special agents in charge. They get bonuses for the number of arrests they make.
Wow.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's.
Think about that.
No perverse incentives here.
No perverse incentives, but it's worse. It's far worse than that, because here's what's happening. You were talking about the history of the FBI.
Right.
So let's take a step back there for a moment. In the history, the 100-plus-year history of the FBI, they never, ever, ever concerned themselves with misdemeanor defendants or offenders or charged, because that's not their charge.
Right.
They only go for the big fish. They only go for felonies. That's the only thing they ever did in their 100-year history until a particular date on the calendar, and that date was January 6, 2021. And suddenly they were then weaponized by their parent organization, the Department of Justice, to in fact go after. So not only had the FBI never been used to investigate, arrest, misdemeanor offenders, they had never ever swatted a misdemeanor offender before, and now they're literally swatting people with these four misdemeanor charges. I avoided that, probably because of my press status,
right?
Probably because of the publicity that would have been brought to that, which they did not want, and they certainly didn't want what they got on Friday anyway. But we gave it to them. That's why we had the Blaze cameras out there,
right?
Was to rub their noses in it.
Right.
But the point being is that this is how weaponized they are against January 6th defendants. And now let's move forward through your line of questions there and consternation. And we get to the part about Why did they, you know, first of all, as I said, they accused me of things that I did not do
right
in order to get a quick plea deal. All right. So now, why would they do this to a journalist? Well, first of all, they're going to make the case that because I was independent at the time and not working for any established agency, mm-hmm. that I don't have really the cred to make that claim, despite 25 years of writing and other events that I've covered and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
They're going to try and make that claim. But let's talk about charge number one specifically. That is the, you know, entering a restricted space.
Yeah.
One thing that your audience needs to know, and one thing that almost nobody in the country knows, unless they've heard me tell the story now, is this, is it is not legal ever for a journalist, regardless of your credentials and regardless of the size, magnitude, prestige of the agency that you work for, to operate and work across a restricted boundary or a police line. Now, not without express permission from law enforcement.
Right.
Now, over the decades or maybe centuries, journalists have been allowed to do so in the public interest, to document and to tell the story of whatever is behind that restricted line or that police line, so that it can be in the, we can see it in the newspaper, on television, on Walter Cronkite, whatever.
Right.
And so that's always been available to us to do that. So what we're looking at here is a case of selective prosecution by virtue of the fact that so far, we've identified roughly 6 to 8 independent journalists, all with a right-leaning voice, right-leaning perspective, who have faced charges from DOJ related to January 6th and related with going into the restricted area. Mm-hmm. But one group of journalists, whether they're independent, freelancers, stringers, or work for the biggest agencies in the world, have not been charged. And of course, those are the ones that have a left-leaning narrative.
Wasn't there a New York Times journalist in the Capitol?
Well, first of all, and again, these are the kind of, you know, details that I know about January 6th that most people don't know, is there were probably already 100 journalists inside the Capitol before it was ever breached by the protesters. They were there covering. I mean, they were there legitimately, legally, with the permission of Congress. To be there and with the permission of the Capitol Police to cover a very significant day in our nation's constitutional calendar. January 6th is the day that the Electoral College vote is certified by both chambers of Congress.
Right.
So these journalists were already there, but there was about 60 that crossed into the restricted area from outside. And that included LA Times, New York Times. Washington, I can go down the list. I mean, photojournalists and journalists like myself, investigative reporters, riot chasers, that's a whole new class of journalism now. And all manner of journalists crossed that territory into that restricted space, whether it was either the exterior barricades or the Capitol building itself, to document the story and to follow the story where the story was going, which is exactly what I did. I had no foreknowledge whatsoever that there was anything going to transpire in the manner in which it did that day. But as the story moved, I moved with it.
So, and part of Gabe's question was, you know, asking about the narrative that's being sort of hustled,
the insurrection narrative.
That this was clearly an insurrection. They're using that word. They're trying to ride that wave and get everything they can out of it. I mean, you were there. Was that an insurrection? And what do you make of that play?
Well, first of all, sticks, flagpoles, bear spray does not an insurrection make. Put it down. I mean, it is. I wrote this either in my first or second article about January 6th. I wrote it is the most absurd on its face claim, that part of the narrative, that it was an insurrection. It was not. And let's be even more honest. And in fact, I'm going to always be more honest than the MSM is going to be. There are only somewhere between 300 and 400 people total that are going to be charged with some form of violence, some form of interfering with the police, or property damage out of the tens of thousands of people that arrived at the Capitol. And so the vast majority of the people that went to the rally that day didn't even come over to the Capitol. And so when you're talking about a mostly peaceful protest,
right,
this is by definition, quintessentially, the most peaceful of protests, which had some violent element to it, mm-hmm. all within the span of, you know, 6 months that year.
Yeah.
And so and that's true by the math. So when we do that, if you're going to call Minneapolis a mostly peaceful insurrection, right, while you're on camera with a, you know,
building burning on fire
behind you, yeah, right, don't dare try to tell me that this was an insurrection, because while there have been about a half a dozen people arrested for having firearms at the Capitol that day, the one thing that never happened is nobody pulled their weapons on a cop. That's right. Important.
Yeah.
It's important to note is, so yeah, if there right. was the intent of an insurrection, even by those 300 to 400 people that did violence that day, why didn't those, you know, as they call them, maggots, why didn't the maggots pull their weapons? The truth of the matter is I believe that they intended, or that the powers that be that set this up, I believe that they thought that that's exactly what was going to happen, that these MAGA people were going to show up fully armed, and that there right. would be a shootout,
right,
and that their hope, besides just the insanely, there's never been a more significant narrative victory, maybe in the history of our country, won by the left that day by right. either those provocateurs right. who set this up, or the stupid people that joined in.
Right.
And that's really the story of the day. It's not an insurrection,
right.
but I think that they expected that there would be gunfire, gunplay, and that there would be even more serious consequences than what happened. And thank God it didn't.
Is Thomas Massey helping you? Is any of your senators, Congress? I mean, like, how come this hasn't been nipped in the bud by conservatives? This has been going on for, you know, years now of, you know, journalists and citizens who haven't even been charged yet, but they're still in jail in D.C.
There's actually nobody sitting in the jail that hasn't been charged. That's not accurate. They are all charged.
Okay.
Many of them have been sitting in there for over 3 years without trial.
Okay.
And that's significant enough in it.
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's jump back over to the other topic that we were just talking about. I want to be specific about this narrative about the insurrection and the technical details of that for you, because there's one thing that you have to understand is that the Capitol Police, when you say, why hasn't Congress done anything about that? Mm-hmm. Is you would think they would, you would think they could, because Capitol Police has jurisdiction over all of the crimes. They have investigative jurisdiction, not the federal government, not I'm saying not the federal, they are part of the federal government, not the DOJ, not right. the FBI,
right.
because they're part of the executive branch.
Right.
But the problem is that, and this is the bombshell, and we're rolling this bombshell out now that I've been arrested, and we're going to prove this. We're going to show it to everybody. Is that the Capitol Police are more powerful than Congress. Now, let that marinate for a second. Can you maybe guess why?
Because they protect all the buildings and voting processes and legislative processes. I don't know.
Well, they are the personal security guards of Congress members.
Yeah.
Therefore, they know where all the bodies are buried. Ooh. They know who buried them. They know who sleeps with who.
Right.
They know who is not exactly the sexuality they claim to have been when they were voted into office. Mm. They know everything. They are more powerful than Congress. And it's one of the reasons why January 6th investigations by a GOP majority Congress or House of Representatives have been thwarted and stifled this entire time. And we're going to be part of my job.
Wow.
Wow.
Story.
What?
Oh my goodness. So wait,
have you caught anything that you can talk about now that has evidence of that narrative?
Illustrates that.
No. No, we are, and I am working with Congressman Hurst to answer your question. Yes, we're working very closely with some. Some of those are well known, mm-hmm. So I don't mind talking about them. Barry Loudermilk and his staff at the what they call the House Admin Subcommittee for Oversight, mm-hmm. Have been incredibly helpful in my investigations. Okay. Thomas Massey's staff has been very helpful in my investigations. I met personally back in May of last year with both Jim Jordan and Mike Johnson, now Speaker Johnson,
mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. May. And as a result of that meeting that I had with them, I was then given access, basically carte blanche access to the Weaponization Committee investigators. So I've been working with them for almost a year now. And then in addition to that, we have very, very deep sources in the Capitol Police. We have whistleblowers that we have personally developed and that we are working with who want to be whistleblowers. There is more fear among Capitol Police about coming out than maybe any other federal agency. You know, the Capitol Police are, and this is a clue, another hint towards what I, you know, that blockbuster reveal I just gave you a moment ago, is that, you know, Capitol Police are not subject to Freedom of Information Act requests.
Oh my goodness.
Did you know that?
No.
Wow.
There's a reason for that.
No FOIA.
That's right. No FOIA for Capitol Police documents, emails, paper trails at all. There's a reason for that. It's back to the same reason that I gave you. Congress has exempted them from FOIA because, again, Capitol Police knows where all the bodies are buried.
Wow.
And they have to exempt them to protect themselves.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that every legislator up there on Capitol Hill is a bad guy or bad woman. I'm not saying every one of them have skeletons in their closets. I'm not saying that about any of them. But just again, if you think about how thwarted we have been, even with a GOP House, which has the oversight over the Capitol Police, we could be so much further along in our investigations, right, if these committees could just hand me the documents. Right. They're not classified.
Mm.
They can't. And the reason they can't is because their majority is so razor thin that any retribution from the Capitol Police would be devastating and they could lose their majority.
So wow. Where do you go from here? Are you going to take a plea deal? Are you going to take this all the way? Where are you going from here?
My instinct and I have said over and over again that I'm not going to take a plea deal, but there's a big danger in that. I mean, obviously the biggest danger is the potential for prison time because yeah. you can't win in front of a DC jury. I mean, first of all, right. The scorecard right now is that the federal government has won 99.75% of all cases related to January 6th. Some of those, there have been a couple of victories in bench trials. There's been a couple of actual acquittals in bench trials. In fact, only two.
Wow.
But in jury trials, there has not been a single. There's been a couple of charges where juries were hung. There's been charges where juries had it where a defendant might have seven charges and the jury's only convicted them of three or one, whatever the case may be. But nobody has gotten out unscathed from a DC jury related to January 6th yet.
Wow.
And by contrast, on a normal day for non-J6 related trials in DC, the feds only win about 60%, but they're winning 99.75% here, showing you how prejudiced these juries are against January 6th defendants.
Wow. And so, all right, we could keep going for a long time, but we need to let you go. But I'm curious, why all of the leg chains? why the or like the jumpsuit? Why the why putting you in a you know in a cell with the meth dealer? I mean,
don't they just like get your thumbprints and let you go?
I mean, it seems like a lot of charade. Are they trying to get you afraid?
Every single law enforcement officer, state, local, federal, retired, currently employed, I've received hundreds of messages in my DMs and in my, you know, my social media message threads from law enforcement and former law enforcement. They all said this was, every one of them without exception, that this was total BS.
Yeah.
And these include you know, retired and whistleblowing FBI agents. You guys know some of the names of the more famous ones that left the agency because of January 6th related issues. And without exception, they've all said that this was a specific punishment on me because of the type of misdemeanor, nonviolent. We should have been given just an order to appear. Myself and my attorney would have been able to show up to the courtroom at the right time for my hearing, walk in, hear my charges, make my initial statements and answer the questions that the judge poses at the time, and then walk out wearing my suit and tie. Instead, the days before I quote unquote self-surrendered, this didn't even have to go through the FBI. Instead, they issued an actual arrest warrant, and then the attorney, the assistant U.S. attorney, in touch with my lead attorney, informed him that I needed to show up and present myself at the FBI office, not the courthouse, at the FBI field office, in shorts, a t-shirt, and flip-flops. I have the email.
Wow.
And that obviously the implication would be that would be easier for to put me into an orange jumpsuit and my leg chains. Well, I arrived with a jacket and a tie on.
Yeah.
And my attorney went up to the FBI agents before I walked over, negotiated with them. They said, okay, you don't have to, so I had to take off my jacket, had to take off my belt, my tie, and my shoelaces, but I was allowed to be in my shoes, my shirt, my slacks for the remainder of the day. And then they fingerprinted me there at the FBI office. They put me in the handcuffs, put me in the car, drove me over to the courthouse, and that's where they transferred me to the U.S. Marshals, who then put me in leg chains and belt chains and put me in a cage.
That is absolutely wicked.
It is
absolutely evil. What they've done to you, Steve. Obviously, clearly intended to really like harass you, to like shame you, to punish you. And I think, I mean, this story's got to get out because I mean, this is what they tried to do to us in Idaho too, with Gabe. I mean, we were singing psalms in our city hall parking lot during COVID. And it was a similar thing. It's a show of force. It's an attempt to try to get people to intimidate you and put your head down and don't stand up, for your rights, for truth. In our case, the elders of our church, after this arrest happened, we said 2 days later, we called for another psalm saying we were out there the first time when Gabe was arrested with 250 people. We came back with about, I don't know, 700 or 800
people in the parking lot.
And there wasn't a cop in sight.
Yep.
That's all.
And I think if people, who believe in truth, who believe in freedom, who believe in Christ, don't stand up now, I think it's just going to be more
worse
of this insanity that they've done to you, Steve. And
these FBI agents and marshals, they're just doing their job.
Right.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah. That's what they say. And of course, if you talk to these FBI whistleblowers about the guys who are just doing their jobs, they said if they keep doing their jobs in 2 years or whatever, however much time they have left till they earn their pensions, there won't be a country for them to retire into.
Oh, man. Steve, thank you for your courage.
Wow, man.
And for telling the truth. And I do hope you'll fight this. I hope you'll fight it all the way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you,
gentlemen. If you're single, married, if you're married, have kids. If you have kids, go baptize them. Until tomorrow, next week, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Go fight, laugh, and feast. This is Cross Politic.
You sit in church week after week, embracing the truth of God's word. You believe the gospel and claim Jesus Christ as your Lord. Yet you continue to struggle with pornography. You feel like a hypocrite, returning to the sin you hate that mocks the God you love. You desperately wonder, is lasting freedom even possible? Yes, you can overcome pornography, but not alone. 2 Timothy 2:22 says, "Now flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Only by repeatedly running from sin to Christ with other believers can you hope to enjoy lasting freedom. You can live with purity and integrity. Take courage, seek accountability, and do whatever is necessary. Get equipped at accountabletoyou.com.